You're listening live to the 14th episode of the Armand and Akil Show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Akil Krishnan.
And I'm Armand Rana. It's Saturday, the 23rd of March, 2024, at 5.05 p.m. We are broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hankamenam-speaking Musqueam people. So, Akil, welcome back from your wondrous travels again. Which new land did you discover this time?
It's funny you should say that because I was in Montreal and then Newfoundland. And it was absolutely incredible. For anyone who is thinking of planning a vacation, I highly, highly, highly recommend going to Newfoundland. Absolutely fantastic. So I was in St. John's for supposed to be a couple days. And then there was an Atlantic snowstorm. By the end of it, I think we'd received like 74 centimeters of snow over a 36-hour period. My first proper Canadian snowstorm that I experienced, it was absolutely magical. Now, the thing is...
Sounds like a lot. I don't even know how to visualize that.
So imagine that you are living your life in this city, and then suddenly, when you wake up one morning, there is snow up to your chest, and you can't really leave your house. Can you imagine that?
I guess. Maybe I've seen it in movies.
Exactly. It was exactly like being in a movie. It was fantastic. So all you do is you stay indoors, you eat Tautens, which are Newfoundland pancakes, cod tongues, some scallops.
What's a cod tongue?
It's exactly what you think it is. It is the tongue of a cod.
What? Okay. Interesting.
I
don't know if you're trolling me at this point or it's a real thing.
See, it's such a magical place that you almost can't believe all the stuff that you could get there. So it's a very real thing. Now, in the interest of transparency and honesty, I did not get to try cod tongues this time. So if anyone knows a place to get cod tongues in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland or within a 50-kilometer drive of here, I'm in the market for some cod tongues.
Okay, yeah, I see. Well, interesting.
Those were my travels. I was on the easternmost point of North America, Cape Spear, which is fantastic. It's 5,000 kilometers from where we're sitting right now. Also, it made me realize just how ridiculously, and I mean ridiculously, in capital letters, large this country is. Because at that point...
How large is it?
It is so large that I was closer to Portugal, just across the tiny pond called the Atlantic, than I was to Vancouver. And it's... still the same country. So absolutely absurd.
So are you saying that Newfoundland should be part of Portugal? That's an interesting political position. I haven't heard that one before.
Well, you know what's interesting is there's a tiny set of islands that are actually French territory.
Oh really?
Just southern Newfoundland. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I'm gonna absolutely butcher this. Saint-Miquelon, I think, is the name. If there's any angry French listeners, please don't email me about this. But it is a French overseas territory, and it's actually just southern Newfoundland. And they have some exclusive fishing rights because they own those islands. It's actually pretty wild. Yeah, yeah. That's fantastic. Anyway, I know we talked about this. So we're going to plan a trip probably summer of next year.
Yeah, let's see.
When the Canada Summer Games are going to be happening in St. John's.
Oh, really? That sounds impressive.
Yeah. So that's been the past two and a half weeks of my 3 weeks of my life. What about you? What's been going on with you, Roman?
Yeah, a bit of a reorg at work, some new opportunities for me. But you know, one thing that I've always appreciated it, you know, working in a multinational tech company with, you know, a lot of cultural diversity, different time zones. But I really started to appreciate it more recently is when, you know, you really appreciate cultural diversities when you have arguments, like intense arguments,
exactly,
with people from different cultures.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, a bunch of what I would describe as, you know, elderly kind of Indian uncle kind of people who could be my uncle. Not my uncle, yeah, but could be, right?
Yeah.
With, you know, legit, you know, Indian accents facing off against some, you know, our European comrades who happen to be from Czech Republic.
What would you call them?
I guess Czech bros would be, and you know, it's interesting to play. So the Indian uncle would be like, you know, why are you jumping around so much, man? And then they would be, I can't do a Czech accent, but they would be like going like very, very like, you know, proper and be, you know, trying to give some more technical guidance. And it was just like, at the end of the day, we got a great solution. We solved the problems we had, but just, yeah, just shout out to cultural diversity in the workplace.
And the bringing out of like the primal, you know, the primal urge to just like revert to your culture and just go like, this is what's happening. Why are you jumping around? It's great. I love it. So what was the, how did you contain your laughter throughout this entire exchange? Because it sounds absolutely wonderful and hilarious.
That's the wonderful wonders of the mute button on Teams.
So you've been successfully using it. Yeah, you haven't made any mistakes with that one.
Actually, yeah. I didn't speak throughout that entire meeting. I was just a spectator watching.
I mean, it's hard to speak with lots of popcorn in your mouth, right?
So
as we're talking about all of this, what's the theme for the show today, Roman?
Me doing bad Indian accents, no.
Excellent Indian accents. Excellent. Don't ever sell yourself short.
So last time we talked about, you know, the return of ethno-nationalism combined with all the, you know, elections happening throughout the world. And today I was thinking to give our listeners kind of some idea of the process that leads to new candidates and even parties that we vote for during the elections. Like, they don't spring from the sky. There's not some, you know, preordained. They kind of feel that way when you got a ballot. But there is a process. It can be messy. It's sometimes more transparent, and sometimes it can involve shadowy party apparatchiks picking candidates. And speaking of which, Akhil, you are on the riding association of the BC-NDP, which is the provincial party, ruling provincial party here. What is it like being a shadowy party apparatchik?
It's interesting that you decided to use my technical official title for my resume, because most people don't do that. So at the provincial level, it's called a constituency association.
It's not a riding association.
Now we're talking federal politics and.
It's constituencies.
I would appreciate.
I mixed up my apparatchiks.
I'd appreciate if you call me the right type of apparatchik next time, please. Okay. Please and thank you. So I'm part of the constituency association for my riding, and basically, you can think of the constituency association as kind of the election without an election, right? They kind of do what elections do.
That sounds like a dictatorship.
No. I mean,
an election. It's like a Putin-style election.
No, let me rephrase that. It's the election between elections.
Okay.
Right.
Okay,
well, you do a lot better. Of the stuff where the elections do, where you maintain outreach with voters, you keep a finger on the pulse of the issues that are happening in your constituency or riding, and you do the fundraising functions and all of that you might have, without it being an actual campaign, because you can only have a campaign once the writ has dropped and the formal campaign period begins. That's basically what it is. I am the treasurer for the constituency association. So what I do is I sign checks for events and just maintain the books. That's pretty straightforward.
How did you like even end up?
So it's very interesting. Much like most things in my life where I just kind of stumbled into it, the year is 2020. Akhil has recently purchased a car. There is an election going on. Akhil is not a citizen yet and cannot vote. What does Akhil do? Decides to get involved. Akhil can't vote, so he decides to volunteer for a campaign. So I rocked up to this one of the campaign meetings, and I said, hey, I'm a guy, I've got a car. Lawn signs can fit in the boot. So, I'm willing to drive around, drop off some lawn signs, and go knocking on some doors.
So wait. You were a citizen of which country at that time?
I declined to answer. No, I was a citizen of India at the time.
So This is Indian interference into Canadian elections.
I was a permanent resident at the time, and there was no interference. It was all above board. It was fine. Okay. There was nothing shady. There were no shady dollars.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. So what is happening in, there's some interesting stuff happening in Little Mountain.
Some of our listeners may know, many maybe don't know yet, George Heyman, who is the MLA for my constituency, is not running for re-election this year. His announcement came out, I think, about a couple weeks ago now. So it is going to be an open seat. So what's really important in this election for us in the NDP is to see who's going to be our candidate for this election. And the we're in the process of determining who the candidate's going to be. So right now there's the mini campaign between the candidates who hope to be the candidate in the actual election come later this year.
And pray tell us, who are these candidates?
So to some of our longtime listeners, both these names will be familiar. Yeah. So the two candidates for the nomination are Andrea Reimer and Christine Boyle. Former city councillor Andrea Reimer and current city councillor Christine Boyle.
And most importantly in their career, former guests of the Armand and Nicole show. The most important aspect
exactly.
of their resume.
Yeah, of all of their achievements, and they've had amazing careers so far. I think the highlight has been the 55 minutes they spent on this show.
Yeah, that's actually what gave them the motivation. That's the only thing they have in common.
Exactly.
It's what gave them the motivation to run. They were like, now that we were interviewed on the Armand and Nicole show, now we feel ready.
Exactly.
To run for public office.
Exactly.
In Little Mount in particular.
In particular. And, you know, there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, they were on the show. They got the street cred necessary in order to run for the nomination.
Yeah, I think we just have a huge following in Vancouver. Like nowhere else in Vancouver, just in Little Mountain, we must be having a huge following.
I'm so glad that you recognize exactly what I see too. So for anyone else who is thinking of a nomination or is unsure about it, be a guest on our show. Be a guest. Run in the West.
Yeah, especially if you think of running in Little Mountain. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Specifically.
Yeah. Like if you're the conservative candidate, BC Liberals, come on.
Yeah. But what's really cool about this is...
Oh, BC United. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Which, actually, on that note, that confusion has obviously nothing to do with why their conservatives are surging in the polls right now.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because this whole situation has been very eye-opening for me because I had no idea how Canada actually is nominated. And it's been really cool to see just what the process is of people, you know, putting their names forward, trying to get the minimum support that you need in order to run for the nomination, then, you know, the nomination meeting and how people
are
eligible.
So support from who? Like support from citizens or support from who needs to support you to?
That's a great
members?
Question. That's a great question. That I do not exactly know, but I think there's anyone who is a member can run for the nomination.
Okay.
And then you would at the nomination meeting, you would get votes from verified members. So members who are on the party rolls, who have contributed this year to remain on the party rolls and were members before the cutoff date.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you show
but
up.
But have to be members of that riding or it could be from a different riding?
You have to be members of that riding.
Okay.
Yes.
So your address needs to be in that riding or something?
No, not necessarily, but you do have to be an active member of that riding.
Okay.
So you...
How do they judge that?
It depends on which candidate you contribute to.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If I get facts checked about this... I beg your pardon.
This is the fact checking happening right
this
now.
This is a live fact check. I appreciate you. I love the PolitiFact role you're playing here, Armand. It really is. It adds an interesting layer to the show.
But, you know, speaking about, you know, I just mixed up the BC United, BC Liberals, you know.
BC Conservatives.
BC Conservatives, whatever. You know, speaking of this confusion, party, the identity crisis.
Yeah.
Different people are reacting in different ways
to
the situation, right? And.
Oh, please continue.
Mike DeJong, I think his name is Mike DeJong, who was a former finance minister in BC, is having some very late in life reflections on his career. What's happening with him?
So let's take a listen to CTV News' coverage about this. I think you're going to find this quite interesting. So let's see what they had to say about this.
Long has served in the BC legislature, but now he says he's thinking about making a move to federal politics. CTV's Rob Buffum is live in Victoria with more. Rob?
Mike DeJong is currently the longest serving member of the BC legislature, and there's been speculation for some time that he might run federally. Well, today that speculation got ramped up. After 3 decades in provincial politics, BC United's Mike DeYoung says he's giving serious consideration to an offer to run for Pierre Poilievre's federal Conservatives.
I've indicated a willingness to consider it. I haven't made any final decisions, haven't ruled it in, haven't ruled it out.
DeYoung, the MLA for Abbotsford West, a former finance minister, attorney general, and health minister, says he's been approached before to run federally, but this time is different.
I like the fact that in Mr. Poilievre, there's a leader who's prepared to talk about the dangers associated with the level of spending, the level of debt and deficit.
High-profile BC United MLA Ellis Ross announced he's switching to the federal Conservatives in the next election. If DeYoung makes the same call, it would be a big loss, says this political scientist.
Given BC United's struggles in the polls right now, to lose a candidate of this stature, I think is a big blow to them.
BC United leader Kevin Falcon issued...
Yes, yeah, so I did butcher his name. It's Mike DeYoung, not Mike DeJoung.
Yeah. But yeah, so what do you think about his motivations for running? I quote here, I like the fact that in Mr. Poilievre, there's a leader that's prepared to talk about the dangers of the level of spending, the levels of debt and deficit, unquote.
Yeah, I think there is a perception right now that the inflation that we see right now is somewhat connected to some, you know, government programs, and not necessarily caused by, you know, necessarily global phenomena. So, you know,
axe the tax.
Yeah. Or also related to, you know, carbon taxes. I think the real motivations is Pierre Poilievre is way ahead in the polls. BC United is, what are we looking at the projections? They're slated to win 4 seats.
Yeah, 3 or 4 seats. The Conservatives, BC Conservatives, are slated to win 5 to 7 seats.
Out of like 80-something seats, yeah, in the BC legislature. So they're slated to get decimated. The provincial party, basically, is slated to get decimated that Mike DeYoung belongs to, while the federal party in next year's election is slated to, you know, win a huge majority. So he's just switching to the faster car.
As a Formula One fan, absolutely, you know, that makes perfect sense to me. Yeah, why would you stick with a sinking ship, right? You know, sticking with politics in our general vicinity. Actually, let's come closer home. Let's come to the riding that you live in. What is happening in the federal riding of Vancouver Quadra?
So yeah, we've had we have been represented by the Honorable Joyce Murray. For quite a while. She's actually also South African. And she used to be a BC Liberal at some point in time as well, which is interesting. But she was always, one thing I think that was a focus in her, she's decided to retire. She's, I think, probably nearly 70 or something. But one thing that was always a focus for her was environment. And I found hilarious was just like, reading up about her retirement. I was just trying to find out, you know, that she'd resigned, what happened. And there was this article by Fish Farmer magazine. And this is how they kind of are communicating the fact that she retired. Trudeau sacks Fisheries Minister Joyce Murray. And it says, Joyce Murray, Canada's controversial Minister of Fisheries and Oceans, has lost her job in a major reshuffle by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And then they talk about replacement and says, it's too early to tell if she will follow Joyce Murray's policy of ending open pen farming in British Columbia. Murray has been odd with much of Canada's agricultural industry. Her appointment, the new person's appointment has been welcomed by the BC Salmon Farmer Association. So I don't think there's any connection, but it is interesting, like how these different, special interest groups have like very,
communities,
different. They're like communities, yeah. And I think you know, even with the only interaction I've had with Joyce Murray has been that she was a little bit offended that she didn't get to speak at a Diwali event that we were hosting, in our community. But environment, she, you know, reflection on her tenure. Environment, she did a good job, but maybe in terms of community engagement, Need some work. could be better.
Well, speaking about community engagement, one of the people that are running to replace her, or running for the Liberal nomination at this time, I believe, is someone by the name of Wade Grant, who is currently the currently serves as the Intergovernmental Affairs Officer to the Musqueam First Nation, while also sitting as board chair for the First Nations Health Council and New Relationship Trust. So I think it's pretty cool that you're somebody who we have a candidate who is of Indigenous ancestry who's running to replace her.
Yeah, and I think this, you know, even though the Liberals probably will get wiped out next year, this is one of the safest riding, like historically. Exactly. Like last time the Liberals were wiped out, this was one of the few seats that they had.
Exactly.
So yeah. I think the Liberals will probably hold on to this. But yeah, let's see.
Remains to be seen.
Let's see how things shape out.
Okay, if you're just tuning in, you were listening to the Irmán and Akil show on CITR 101.9 FM. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about our old countries. Stay tuned.
MRG Live presents Shred Kelly at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 29th, 2024, with special guest Hyenas. Hailing from the Canadian Rockies, Shred Kelly is a powerhouse band that seamlessly blends elements of alternative, folk, and rock, making them a mainstay in the Canadian music scene. With a reputation for dynamic live performances, you won't want to miss their Blurry Vision album release tour. Check out Shred Kelly at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 29th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com.
Wrestling fans, let's get ready to rumble!
Boom Pro Wrestling is coming to you live from the Great Hall at the Nest on Friday, March 22nd. Wrestling maniacs of all ages are welcome to watch these talented fighters duke it out at UBC. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and bell time is at 7:30 sharp. Enjoy the cash bar as you cheer on your favorite players. Visit boomprowrestling.com to purchase your tickets. And hurry, because this event is sure to be a knockout. Don't miss Boom Pro Wrestling at UBC campus on March 22nd.
Moon River, the collaborative new project for members of the Juno-nominated indie folk mainstays, The Wooden Sky and Linda Ortega, Kathleen Edwards, and Corb Lund's bands, could easily be described as a supergroup of sorts. Not just because of their collective talents, but because the music on their debut album, Volume 1, is simply super. Their knack for creating sonic worlds that are at once lightly trippy and wholly inviting means that as much as they draw on inspirations from decades past, they maintain a pleasing, distinctly out-of-time feel. Described as Buddy Holly meets krautrock, it's something that you need to hear to fully comprehend. And Vancouverites will have the chance on April 5th at Green Autobody at 1822 Pandora Street, alongside Brandon Wolf Scott and Jody Glenham. Advance tickets are on sale now via Eventbrite for $22.63. So get yours now and mark your calendar to see Moon River live on Friday, April 5th. MRG Live presents Zahara at the Fox Cabaret on March 26, 2024. Hailing from LA's Highland Park, Zahara makes detailed melodic indie rock that flits between shoegaze, post-punk, and dream pop. Their airy melodies, pensive guitar, and heart-churning lyrics join to create a dreamy indie rock. Don't miss Zahara at the Fox Cabaret on March 26, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com. Dove Club presents Tree Fort Music Fest, coming to downtown Boise March 20th to 24th, 2024. Lineup is out now, featuring musical acts Channel Trace, Ty Segall, Nico Case, Frank Moody, Kristen Maroney, Drama, Dead, and so much more. This five-day festival features over 400 bands, plus comedy, yoga, food, beer, art, films, drag, and more. Full lineup, ticket packages, and more information at treefortmusicfest.com.
Good morning, this is Randy Pione on KRES Radio. It's a good day to be indigenous.
Hey, Victor! Hey, Victor!
Hey, Victor!
Hey, Victor!
Hey, Victor! Victor's mom makes the best fry bread in the whole world. It's so good they use it for communion back home.
Hey, Victor, did you hear that Unseated Airways is watching smoke signals?
Mark your calendars for Wednesday, March 20th.
I mean, every Indian in the world was there.
Whenever the ancestors say so. So about 6:30 Munyan time. At CITR 101.9 FM's movie night, you'll be provided with refreshments that are passed down from generation to generation.
An icon from res to res.
I was told it was risen from the dead.
A staple at feasts across all of Turtle Island.
A pairing made by the creator.
Fry bread and Pepsi.
Check our Instagram at Unseated Airwaves for the poster. Hi, hi.
I think it's a fine example of the oral tradition.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Irman and Akhil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. This is another special episode where we tackle news stories from the past month. So let's first go across the pond to the old country, to this new country. Irman, take it away.
Yeah, so there was a by-election in Rochdale in the UK.
Excellent pronunciation.
Is that correct?
No idea.
Okay, then thanks. It's definitely our old country. It's the old country.
It's the old country. The old country to this new country.
Yes. Maybe it is our old country since we are colonized peoples. So he's a kind of controversial character in British politics, you know, historically kind of opposed various wars when kind of the rest of the country was, you know, the Iraq War and other wars. He won a by-election running for a third party. Let's kind of take a listen to that clip. It's kind of entertaining how he engages with the journalist in that clip.
Let's go listen to it now.
I'm standing here at George Galloway's campaign headquarters. George Galloway, did you just watch the Prime Minister's speech?
I didn't watch it, but I understood the first part of it related to the Rochdale by-election.
The Prime Minister has just said that the election of you to Parliament is beyond horrifying. What do you say to that?
Well, I can understand how disappointed he is about the by-election. The Conservative Party, which is the government of the country, was crushed, not just by me, but by an independent candidate that no one had ever heard of before outside of Rochdale. So it was a disastrous night for the Conservatives and a disastrous night for Labour. I got more votes than Labour and the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats and the Reform Party put together, which adds up to a pretty crushing rejection of the two-party system. So I understand why he's alarmed.
I want you to address some of the specifics that the Prime Minister said about you this evening. He said that you backed Hezbollah. Is that true?
I don't know what that means, backed Hezbollah. I oppose Israel's occupation of Lebanon, and I respect the right of people in occupied territory to resist their occupier. And I've done so since Hezbollah was formed and Israel occupied much of Lebanon, right up to the Litani River, regularly bombing Beirut and so on. So I'm not sure what business that is of his, because you see,
Hezbollah are a terrorist organization.
Actually, and they're part of the government of Lebanon, a country with which we have sovereign diplomatic relations. I had this debate with Sky's Anna Botting in 2006. It's quite an epic clip. You should watch it. More than 100 million people have. They said all these things about me in the by-election. And in the by-election, it was them that got crushed in the democratic process. So I'm not sure why he would reheat it now.
The Prime Minister is saying
that
you are...
We talk as if this is God. We're talking about little Rishi Sunak in the fag end of his prime ministership. Don't talk to me as if he's come down from the mount with tablets of stone. The things that he says are somehow meant to awe me. They may awe you, they don't awe me.
A lot of people have just watched what the Prime Minister said. This is your opportunity to respond to what he said.
Well,
he says that there are forces here at home trying to tear us apart. He is implying you are a divisive figure.
He's a very colourful character, isn't he?
Yeah, what's your reaction to that clip?
I mean, I've voiced George Galloway before, and my reaction is almost always the same. This man is, he's definitely has convictions, and he's very good with journalists.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very good when he speaks to them, and he's hilarious. The title of this this video, and it's something he says later, is, quote, "I despise the Prime Minister," unquote.
Yeah. Because the interviewer eventually asked him, do you respect the Prime Minister? And he said, why would you ask me that? I despise the Prime Minister. But of course he has some probably interesting views in terms of his relationship with, he comes on, Iranian state media quite often. But I think what I did find interesting, again, was how the dynamic with kind of reframing the conversation, still quite respectfully, but kind of reframing the conversation in terms of, just because the Prime Minister says something, it doesn't mean it's
canon. Right?
It's canon. And once again, highlighting the real situation, bringing back to the real situation in Gaza right now. This in this election in England, one of the dynamics happening is Rishi Sunak is way down the polls.
Yeah.
Labour historically has done really well with the Muslim community in England, and Keir Starmer is having some difficulty because he's been quite vocal in his support for Israel, kind of bridging that gap. And he's had to, in this writing, he had to actually withdraw the Labour candidate for making anti-Semitic remarks. And that's kind of what gave Galloway this opportunity to win the seat. So that's kind of the macro picture. And I think, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think Labour will probably still, end up winning the election handily.
It does look that way, yeah.
Yeah, but there is a real situation right now continuing to happen, as we've had in the past in Gaza, where Israel is continuing to
push the offensive farther south now to pretty much the last remaining city that's not under full occupation.
I think Canada has, which is the border region with Egypt.
Exactly.
I think in Canada's kind of, there was an NDP motion to immediately recognize Palestinian statehood, which, they couldn't put together with liberals, but they did pass something that would, I think, end arms sales
to Israel,
which is some, change in public, foreign policy of Canada.
Absolutely.
So, this situation of Gaza, this clip is funny, but the situation of Gaza is continuing to...
continuing to deteriorate, and it's something that...
And the humanitarian situation is only going to get worse with, the hospitals out of commission. Yeah. So many people crowded into over a million people crowded into one town, basically.
Yeah. With nowhere to go.
With nowhere to go. And with, Israeli forces pressing in. I think it's a lot of the other sewers, a lot of other public infrastructure. But I think 70-80% of buildings in Gaza have been... damaged
level.
It is an ongoing situation.
It's interesting that George Galloway has won an election now. He was quite a loud voice in British politics a couple decades ago, and it's interesting to see him back. He's a very, very funny guy.
An effective communicator, I guess.
Very effective communicator.
Foreign policy issues.
Moving to our old country, your old country.
Yeah. Old squared,
yes. Going back beyond South Africa. An inspiring story from South Asia.
What's happening?
The story is of a former barista who's running for re-election in the upcoming elections.
Oh, fascinating. Sounds like AOC.
A little bit, yeah. That's the canon of this candidate. And they were a former barista which was the core to their rise. The, you know, the story of their meteoric rise in the politics of the subcontinent. And I, you know, I was once, my first job was working at a pizza shop here at UBC as a pizza cutter slash barista. So this this story's been pretty inspiring for me.
Yeah.
So what do you know about this story, Arman?
Yeah, I'm just curious to learn more. Like, what are they? Where are they running?
They're running in Varanasi. Yeah, I don't know how many of our listeners know who the candidate is right now, but that candidate is running for re-election. Appears they're almost guaranteed to win re-election, and you know they've risen to the not only Indian Parliament, but to the highest office in the land, if you can believe it.
Oh, what's their name?
Narendra Damodar Das Modi.
Oh, okay. yeah, well, inspiring story.
So the reason we brought this up is just a little update about the current elections in India. The opposition coalition, INDI, has completely fallen apart. The ruling party is almost guaranteed to win re-election.
Have you been following the story about the electoral bonds?
A little bit. Why don't you give us a little bit of context
about that? So what I understood about the electoral bonds is basically there was a new political funding vehicle that was introduced under this current government's Indian AOCs. definitely not Indian AOCs. It's just for our listeners to be clear. The current Prime Minister of India is from a right-wing, conservative right-wing party, while AOC is kind of more left-wing.
On the other side of the spectrum.
Yes. Under the current government, they introduced a new funding vehicle that basically allowed corporations to give money to political parties that would be anonymous to everybody except the government.
Exactly.
And this was to somehow prevent people from extracting favors. But since the government knew, it was also always questionable, like, if the government knows, then they can extract favors, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
So anyway.
Because before the scheme, political parties had to, you know, make public all donations about 20,000 Indian rupees. No corporate company was allowed to make donations amounting to more than 7.5% of their total profit or 10% of revenue.
Yeah.
This obviously changes that.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. It changes that because these bonds are anonymous.
Yeah. And I haven't found the media list, but what I understood is basically the Supreme Court came down and basically said that you need to make public this data.
Exactly.
And then the Indian government or the State Bank of India basically said, actually, we'll make it public after the election. Right. And then the Supreme Court kind of cracked some whips and said, yeah, actually, you need to. Make it public now. And they eventually did make some of the data public. And so far, I think we see, I think Ambani, first of all, the ruling BJP is by far, raising more money than practically all.
Like
all the other parties combined times three or something crazy.
Absolutely absurd.
Yeah. And actually, India, the election right now in India is going to be the most expensive election in human history. More expensive than a United States election.
Yeah, that is saying something.
So India is a much poorer country than the U.S.
Exactly.
India's GDP is 1/10 that of the U.S.
Exactly. And while India has a population four times what the United States, a little more than four times what the United States does, India is not a wealthy country overall. Yeah. If you look at the per capita GDP, right?
But it's spending $14 billion on their election.
And that is absolutely mind-boggling. Very quickly, right? There are a few challenges to this electoral bonds scheme that are being discussed in the Supreme Court right now. Yeah. The most important thing is that it violates the right to information because political parties are supposed to their donors and their the machinations of political parties are generally supposed to be public, especially in a campaign during a campaign. But there are other concerns too, that it enables backdoor lobbying, and obviously, companies that can donate have a quid pro quo, which this government has been questioned on repeatedly regarding the relationship to some certain billionaires.
Yeah, like for example, the company owned by Ambani, which is who's India's richest man, or was India,
Reliance Industries, yes,
India's richest man, was one of the I think top four users of these electoral bond schemes.
Exactly.
So we are seeing that come out in the data as well to some degree.
Exactly. And while there's an argument that they're not entirely anonymous because you're buying this from a bank that has to perform certain KYC, know your customer functions, it's still quite opaque. And you, just as a random general member of the public, you don't have access to this information. So yes, so it's not entirely above board, to say the least. Moving to the intermediate step. So not the old country square, to just the old country, Roman. We're back to discussing South Africa and upcoming South African elections. What is happening in South Africa?
So the election date is the 29th of May. And the ruling African National Congress, which was the party of Nelson Mandela, is facing the loss of its majority in the National Assembly for the first time since the end of apartheid in 1995. The country is facing multiple crises, including corruption, power outages, general economic decline, and crime. Former President Jacob Zuma has thrown his support behind the newly formed Umkhonto we Sizwe Party. The name itself means Spear of the Nation. It was the name of the armed wing of the ANC during the freedom struggle against apartheid. For those of our listeners who don't know, you can read a lot more about apartheid, but basically it was a system of government and social policies where there was basically racial stratification. Only white people were allowed to vote, and 80% of the country was, 90% of the country was non-white, mostly primarily black. And, you know, that was kind of Nelson Mandela's big struggle, was to fight for non-racial society where everybody can vote and has equal rights. So that was the armed wing, Umkhonto we Sizwe. It was actually an organization that was, I believe, founded by Nelson Mandela at one point in time within the ANC. So let's take a listen. It's a bone of contention when, you know, Jacob Zuma kind of started this new party to fight against the ANC, and he's named it after a kind of former subsidiary organization to the ANC. There's a court battle going on about it. So let's take a listen to the ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula speak about the current state of affairs and this court case.
This upcoming week is that the ANC, or the Electoral Court, I beg your pardon, will be hearing the matter between the ANC and the MK party. And I mean, time and time again, the media has been reporting on the trademark and the names, but we read through your papers and the bones of contention is more technical. So you've contended that the IEC's procedure was not followed properly in registering the MK party. Can you just please clarify that for us?
It will be clarified in court. I respect the court. We have gone to court and we raise our case, follow the court process, and we are putting a very cogent argument in relation to the deregistration of the MK party. This is the first leg. The second one that is coming is the patent. This MK thing, logo and everything belongs to the ANC, and we'll prove that in court. And Jacob Zuma and his supporters, they must be ready for engagement on this one. JZ has been the most destructive person to the National Democratic Revolution.
I know you can't.
He has actually put it in danger in many ways. Now he has thrown the last dice, putting it in a precarious position, mobilizing members of the ANC and everyone else against the movement. That's what he has done. History will remember him for that, for having put the ANC in a difficult position as a former president, as a former stalwart of the ANC. And today he says he must not be called by the name Jacob Zuma. I don't know how he must be called, because he's Jacob Zuma. The fact that he was comrade is because he was with us, and that is a due respect to him. His people and his, chihuahuas call our president with names every day. Cyril Ramaphosa, small boy. Jacob Zuma.
So Jacob Zuma and his chihuahuas.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those chihuahuas. Yeah, I think that what's interesting, you know, if you look into any of these characters of the ANC who are coming out and talking, he literally said Jacob Zuma is the most destructive person to the national democratic revolution, you know, which is what we're talking about, the end of apartheid. Let's take a quick look at the Wikipedia page of Fikile Mbalula. Well, you know, what was his backstory? And you can find this about Cyril Ramaphosa, who's the current ANC president, by anybody. What did he do? When he was the Youth League president, he was instrumental in supporting Jacob Zuma. Mbalula was the figurehead of the ANC Youth League support for Zuma during Zuma's corruption trial and rape trial. In particular, he was reportedly the key figure in orchestrating the ANC Youth League's energetic demonstration outside the courthouse, and he sometimes addressed the crowd there.
So he's been he was in Jacob Zuma's corner. So would you? Okay, here's it.
He was a you know, when all this corruption and state capture were going on, he was the minister of police, minister of sport. In fact, he is admitted to this. This is like one more kind of funny tidbit. So there was a Gupta family who was meant to be the main corrupt family that was capturing the state. And this is kind of a quote from a former cabinet minister, which Fikile Mbalula has admitted to being true. Fikile Mbalula was once new, wept as he spoke. He explained he'd been called to Sachsenwald, the Gupta's residence, by the Guptas in May 2009, and was told that he was being promoted from the position of deputy minister of police to minister of sport. A few days later, the president confirmed this change. The weeping was about the fact that he, Fikile, was happy that he wasn't about the fact that he was happy that he'd made it into cabinet, but it was wrong to have learned it from Atul Gupta. Atul Gupta was one of the Guptas who was controlling South Africa's government during the Zuma years, you know, appointing cabinet ministers and whatnot. You know, a group of family of Indian businessmen who, I think, are currently hiding in Dubai or something.
So yeah, I mean, politics is a, you know, you are doing a bit of musical chairs. That's just the nature of politics. The hard-hitting question for you, Armand, is does that make Fikile Mbalula, was he formerly a Chihuahua?
Yeah, yeah. He was a OG Chihuahua. He was a Chihuahua before it was cool.
He was an
early adopter.
I believe that would make an excellent, excellent, excellent profile. Fikile Mbalula, OG Chihuahua, before we knew all this stuff about state corruption was publicly known.
Yeah, while it was actually happening, it was publicly known, and he was in the government defending it for the longest time until they contrived to have Zuma removed from the presidency. And then suddenly, you know.
Suddenly, it was cooler to not be a Chihuahua anymore.
Yeah.
Understood. Any closing thoughts on upcoming South African election?
I think I've given people a lot to work with.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk. Moving on with the similar theme of sketchy candidates and sketchy elections, let's move to the United States election. And there's a sketchy candidate there. And segueing away from the sketchy candidate to the California Senate election, Adam Schiff is running against Republican Steve Garvey in California.
Yeah, that you're shifting to Schiff.
I'm shifting to Adam Schiff. That's correct. So Adam Schiff. So California has an interesting primary system. It's called a jungle primary, where everybody just runs together, and the top two. It's basically like the general election is the runoff.
Yeah. So it's across different parties. Instead of having one party, like in, you know, Kills Universe, the one party, the NDP, comes together to decide their candidate. BC United come together to decide their candidate. In California world, everybody just runs. And the top two, whether they're same party, different party, they go for the general.
Exactly. So here we have Adam Schiff just talking to CBS News about his election victory. Let's take a listen.
Before we get to that, just can you talk a bit about like what was the strategy? And you know, you were talking earlier about like the funding, how they supported the other candidate.
For sure. So there were, let's say, three major candidates. Excuse me. In this election, there was Adam Schiff, Representative Katie Porter, and Republican Steve Garvey, who's a
MLB.
MLB legend. Yeah. I believe he played for the Dodgers. Now, because California is a reliable blue state, you would think that the top two candidates would have been Adam Schiff and Katie Porter, both of whom have pretty significant profiles on the national stage. But what actually happened was Adam Schiff and his allies spent $11 million on attack ads to elevate Steve Garvey to second place, or actually first place.
Yeah. He actually
won the primary.
The Republican came first and Adam Schiff came second. That's exactly how effective the elevation campaign was.
Exactly.
That Adam Schiff
exactly
conducted.
So basically what the deal was is Adam Schiff knew that it was going to be very challenging for him to – it's going to be challenging to – I don't know, very, but quite challenging for him to win if Katie Porter had come in second and they were going head-to-head.
Or Barbara Lee. Another Democrat. Yeah.
Exactly. So what they did was they ran a number of attack ads basically saying that – Steve Garvey is the wrong choice for California. And in doing so, multiple times, a lot of California voters started thinking, wow, I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. So Steve Garvey must be the obvious choice here.
I don't like Adam Schiff.
Or I don't like Adam Schiff. And Steve Garvey's obviously the choice here. Like the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right?
Yeah.
So that's how Adam Schiff, which, by the way, he says was not the he claims that that might have happened. It's not in any way rigging the election or nothing shady going on. Of course, all the spending was above board. But yeah, it's politicking. That's what it is. Let's just take a listen to what he says. And I want to get your thoughts on some of his response here.
Spend hours on the road because they can't afford a place to live anywhere near work. They want more child have gotten things done that have delivered results. They want more affordable housing. They don't want to have to spend hours on the road because they can't afford a place to live anywhere near work. They want more child care that they can afford so they can join the workforce. They're tired of the performative politics, of the empty rhetoric, of the, who can make the best viral video. They want people to deliver. And I think it's, frankly, a message that Democrats around the country should pay attention to. Our win was so resounding that I think the message of delivering results, not just rhetoric, is a powerful one.
So, Roman, how do you feel? He wants to get things done. He wants to deliver results, less rhetoric.
Yeah, well, I think some of the things he described were great. I guess the one thing, generally that phrase, get things done, in a vacuum, I just find it very triggering for me. It just seems so like what do you want to get done? It's just used so common in politics. Like I'm a politician who gets things done.
Yeah. Well, the most important thing to remember is like literally when you're talking about a policy that affects millions of people, the details don't matter. You just got to get things done.
You just get it done.
Like, just get no.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Get it done.
Yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu gets things done. Donald Trump.
Gets
things done, you know. Any politician that you dislike, most of the time, is the issue that you dislike them the fact that they're getting things done, or is it what they're getting done?
I've never drawn a distinction between what they're getting. I always just, I look at someone, I say they're getting things done, and I like things that are done.
Yeah, it just feels very neat. Like there's a not done pile and a done pile, and when things move, it makes me feel good.
Of things.
Just abstract things.
Just
abstract things. That's how the world works, right? Just abstract things that happen and need to be put in the done pile.
So speaking of things, few other things to wrap things up. You can find us.
You want to get the show done. Is that the thing you want to get done right now?
I believe showtime is almost done. It's almost dinner time.
Okay.
So thank you so much for joining us this evening. A few other things to wrap things up. You can find us at The Irman and Akhil on Instagram and Twitter. So do check us out there.
Yeah, we do continue to have awesome shows and guests lined up for you to continue to listen and subscribe. You can find all of our episodes on our podcast feeds. Do check them out. The music that you hear is by the remarkably talented Sarah Pratt. You can check her out on SoundCloud at Leisure Noise. And yeah.
Have a great evening.
Cheers, guys.